Podcast People's Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 246 of What Most People Think. And this is, I'm recording this on the morning of the Standing Up for Blokes and Boys gig. And I feel tense. This charity game, it's a mugs game. Just go out for yourself, people. Just earn money and donate it. I'm saying that now, but obviously once the event's done, I'm going to be basking in euphoria and a brief window in time where I'm able to kid myself that I'm not a shit human being. And somebody who's definitely not a shit human being is joining me today, making a debut on What Most People Think. It's Rachel Fairburn. Welcome to the show.
Hello. That was a nice intro.
Well, what I think, we have a lady on the show, not just any lady, Northerner. Working class.
Oh, yeah.
So many boxes getting ticked here.
Oh, yeah. Tick those boxes. Go for it.
We met when I was doing the Now show recently.
Yeah.
I sort of said to you, like, you know, obviously I want, like, female comics on the podcast, but there's two problems is that they don't seem to want to be on it generally. That is...
Yeah. Do you know what I think it is? I think, do you know, comedy's so tribal in so many respects, isn't it? So because you vote conservative... Mm. I think people think, oh, well, if I speak to Jeff on his podcast, that means that I'm a Tory and doesn't mean anything like that. Do you know what I mean? I think there's this sort of...
Alignment, yeah, who you stand on a platform with. So when we did the Now show and you said to me that you listened to the podcast, I think I invited you onto it within about 5 seconds, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you did.
It was a bit keen, but you said yes. So I hope this first date goes well.
Yeah.
You're a brilliant stand-up. I mean, there's always so when people being on the podcast for the first time is maybe pause the podcast, you know, if you can have watch a bit of YouTube and stuff. You got some. I was watching some of your clips and you had this great line when you was on, I can't remember if it was on Live at the Apollo, but you said that your middle-class friends describe you as salt of the earth.
Oh, yeah.
You sort of said that means like surprisingly intelligent. Or...
Yeah, he's quite articulate and intelligent for a deprived person. People still say it now. And I think you've probably had the same, you know, I think because you've got a regional accent and you are working class, I think people are often surprised that you have thoughts of your own. Mm. And people have these stereotypical ideas about us still, don't they? You know, it's like, you know, oh, you're working class. People think working class people are all Brexiteers, are all sort of hostile to immigrants, you know, that kind of thing. And I just think, you know, it's not like that. And, you know, you think working class people, we mix with more people than middle class people. You know, I went to school with people from all different backgrounds. I've been in the world of work since I was 16, so I've got friends from all different backgrounds, you know, and or maybe it's just I was brought up like that to sort of, you know, engage with people from different backgrounds. I don't know.
Well, that was what was the funny thing was in the heat of the Brexit argument, there was this sort of thing that, well, it was this being this working class revolt and it's against people from other countries and stuff. And the real kick in the teeth for that was you kind of were going, hang about, like the school that my kids go to has got way more diversity than the school that your kids go to.
Exactly.
People from my background are way more statistically likely to be in relationships with people of a different ethnicity to them.
Yeah.
And then suddenly a vote didn't go their way and they're like, you racist fucks. You're like, hang about.
Yeah.
Let's do a pound for pound comparison of diversity within friendship group and family.
Absolutely. It's like, you know, in Manchester where my family still live, my nieces and my nephews, the school they go to in North Manchester, there's Romanian kids, you know, there's African kids, there's kids from all different backgrounds. My nieces and my nephews' friendship groups are massively diverse. And like, even like I say, I've been in the world of work since I was 16. I've not been to college or university. You know, I've got my mates that I met when I worked in a shoe shop and then I worked in a library. So I came into contact with like academics and stuff like that. I've got a mate who's, you know, a 70-year-old professor who went to Oxford, you know, and you just find common ground with people, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a lovely bloke, but I think he's a bit of a lunatic at times. But, you know, you just find common ground with people. You find, and this is it, I think this is, you know, why you might struggle to get female comedians on particularly is because you get so much shit on the internet anyway. You know, you'll write something and somebody will be like, well, actually, I think you'll find. Or, oh, well, that's wrong because of this. Or, oh, you're ugly or you're fat. And it's like relentless. So I just think sometimes you just think, especially if you're a female comedian, oh, do you know what? I can't be bothered with the hassle.
Yes, yeah, no, there is definitely more scrutiny on female comics. It's something we're going to talk about in the second half. We talk about more about where you're coming from and stuff. It's like there's this idea that female comics have got to toe the line. Like,
yes.
Like, for example, if a comedian like me wants to express a view that is what would be termed gender critical, the jeopardy for me is nothing like what it would be for a female comic. So it would be good to get into that. Other subjects that we're going to discuss this week are, from a political point of view, you know, we've got a Northern woman on. We're going to discuss Angela Rayner, the ultimate Northern, I think she now, if you look on Wikipedia, the JPEG is of Angela Rayner. And so there's these allegations around Angela Rayner. And, you know, the question of, is it registering with the public? Do the public know what they are? Do the public care? That's the question. There's also been stats released showing a 14% reduction in serious violent crime in England and Wales. And again, we'll be kind of going, is that registering? Is that what people think? Is that what most people feel, maybe? And then, as I say, we'll go on to discuss, Rachel, your podcast, your career, and some issues in and around women in comedy. And then in the Patreon only, we were going to discuss some stuff to do with men's mental health, but I just looked at a letter just before I came on, and there was from somebody who's pointing out that divorces and separations are statistically way more higher in lesbian relationships. So I thought this might be a good thing to get into. So are men really as bad in relationships, you know, and they're actually lower in gay relationships. So lads, we're off the hook. So new patrons. So if you are a patron at any level, you will get the podcast early, ad-free and with bonus content as just discussed. And we always speculate on who these people are as per their names. The first one, the name this week is Richard Foyston. That's posh. I mean, that is Foyston on its own. Richard and Foyston. Richard Foyston. I mean, immediately, of course, you think of Foxton's estate agents. Richard Foyston could be a rogue trader, maybe, like a Nick Behrens type character.
Yeah, or if you called him Dickie Foyston, he could be a sports legend.
Dickie Foyston. Oh, yeah, yeah. Dickie Foyston. A commentator on rugby league.
Yeah. Or a bloke with an antique shop.
Yeah, Dickie Foyston. And rumours, let's be honest, around old Dickie Foyston. Don't ever go out back at a shop with Dickie Foyston.
Yeah, don't.
If he offers to show you his doll collection, just don't.
No, he'll foist himself on you. Foisty Foyston. That's what he'll do.
Dickie Foyston and his dodgy dolls. We've got Susan C. Ackerman. I mean, that immediately sounds like someone who's had a best-selling self-help book.
Yes, it does.
The Ackerman Plan.
Yes, the Ackerman Diet.
Oh, diet maybe, yeah, yeah.
Susan C. I like the use of the C.
Yeah, it's kind of self-aggrandizing, but it works.
I like it, yeah.
Susan C. Or maybe the Ackerman Diet. Like, you know those diets that your mums would tell you about from the 70s and you would go, you were just on speed, mum, is what happened.
Yes. Like, those mad diets, or those ones where people just ate. I think I did this one very early, like when I was about 19, when you just eat eggs and meat, the protein one. And by the end of the week, you're just like, oh my God, kill me.
You were probably talking about was the Atkins diet.
The Atkins, yes.
Oh, the Ackerman diet is, I think, widely discredited.
Yes.
And it's going to be the subject of one of those Mr. Bates versus the Post Office type shows, you know.
Yeah.
One of these scandals that the government haven't got round to, and then suddenly there's a drama on it and they give a shit.
Yes.
The main talking point, our super patron, David Demain, he picks up on stuff from last week, and he says, we were talking with Sean Walsh about plastic bottle tops. If you want to see the clip of that, it's on most of my socials. It was pretty funny. Sean went to go into a big observational rant about the fact that plastic bottle tops are now sort of attached to the rim.
Yes.
And I kind of realised halfway through that he hadn't realised that there was a reason for that, whether or not you accept that reason. And the reason is to do with recycling. So David Demain says the technical term for those plastic bottle tops is tethered caps, which does sound like birth control from the 50s.
Oh, it sounds horrible now, doesn't it?
She were wearing a tethered cap. It didn't work. It never did, and we ended up with seven.
Of course, we didn't know out in those days. We didn't even. We never heard of the tethered cap.
It were a French thing. Ashbury Global, the product information people, note that the attached lids for single-use plastic drinks bottles up to 3 litres capacity. Fucking hell, that's a massive drinks bottle. 3 litre.
That is big, yeah.
You're joking. That's a bigger engine than my car. That was an idea first mooted 5 years ago. It will become mandatory in July 2024 across the EU. See, we're better off out.
Wow.
Because of Brexit, the UK isn't required to sign up to the new rules and can make an independent decision on the question of lid tethering. I mean, lid tethering as well. That does sound like, you know, do not go down that rabbit hole. It's like docking, you know. Have you heard of
that? Oh, yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
Do you want to Explain what docking is.
Right, here's what I think it is. Is it something to do with backing onto something?
It feels like it probably is.
That's what I imagine that is.
I thought it was like two men, well, what I would have called when I was at primary school, having a sword fight.
I imagine it's something like that.
Well, listen, make sure that your lids are tethered.
Oh, although tethered lids does sound like something in Liverpool, you know, because they call each other lid.
Yeah.
Tethered lid. Sounds like once, like he's got married and he's not allowed out anymore.
Tethered lid. Or you know, like the word based for lads that are really like call a PR. Oh, that lid's totally fucking tethered, man. Yeah. But look, if you are tethering your lids, please make sure that you use tethered caps because you don't want any STDs.
Absolutely not. Most
people think. Okay, we're going to do the thank you and the fuck you. The thank you this week from me is for people that have sponsored and donated to the event tonight, Standing Up for Blokes and Boys. Peppy Healthcare are one of the organisations that have supported us financially. And check them out at Peppy_Health. That's their social media handle. And Google Peppy Health. And they provide easy online gender-inclusive health support for women and men through their unique app. We've got Peter and Mark at the Original Memorabilia Company. Apparently, they listen to the podcast. They know that I'll be a bit chatty. They put that note there when describing them. The Original Memorabilia Company. Yeah, I mean, that just shows what a fucking corrupt game it is, doesn't it? You know? That these guys, they're actually doing it properly and they have to make the point, like, no, David Jason did actually sign this. The Original Memorabilia Company specialise in celebrity-signed official limited edition fine art photographic prints, the latest of which from 40 Towers includes Don't Mention the War. Look, this feels like, for my podcast crowd, you've got to go on and check out theoriginalmemorabilia.co.uk. Classic British comedies, classic, all right? When you could still say what you like. Each individually signed by John Cleese and the bar scene from Only Fools and Horses. Oh my God, I genuinely didn't know this was signed by David Jason. All numbered and signed by Sir David Jason. Easy does it, play a nice and cool trick. So do check out originalmemorabilia.co.uk and at memorabiliaco. I'll also give a shout out to Hamish at Dad's Matter, who volunteered to do all the desktop publishing for Standing Up for Blokes and Boys for the program, which we've used to make a bit more money. He did get taken into hospital in a health emergency in the middle of it, and he came out of hospital. He went straight into the office. He finished the document. That is a proper bloke, Rachel, isn't it?
That's all right, that. No messing.
Just push it all down. Health schmelf, get me back to work.
That's all right, isn't it, that?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, we don't obviously urge that, but it's weird with blokes, isn't it? You sort of say, look, we don't urge it, but we also will admire it when it happens.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like my dad retired a few months ago. Then I texted him and he said, I'm at work. I'm like, I thought you'd retired. He's like, oh, no, I'm still doing stuff. I'm like, okay.
It's like the priesthood or the mafia. You're never really out as a bloke. You're never really out.
And my dad drives for a living. He's, you know, he's been a taxi driver, bus driver, now he's a coach driver. If he stops driving, that's it.
It's a metaphor.
Yeah, it's got to keep going.
But this is why you're a comic, see? Life on the road. You and him can share favourite service stations. What is your favourite motorway service station, Rachel?
I don't drive, you see. But when I have been driven,
yes,
I do enjoy, of course, what's it called? The Gloucester services is great. To be honest with you, I get really disappointed. Sometimes I get a craving for McDonald's, so it's got to be one that's got a McDonald's that's open.
Well, but that plays against, like, the Gloucester. I do have an issue with Gloucester, is that it's too fancy.
Yeah.
The roof is made of grass, so I'm thinking it's like that Grand Designs programme where that lanky bloke keeps... So I came back 6 months later and there were still issues with the wattle and daub. But the sausage rolls cost £9.
But also my dad, you know, I mentioned on my podcast years ago that my dad, being a coach driver, and he drives, you know, all around the country and all around Europe as well, he told me about these vouchers that coach drivers get to use at service stations. Mm-hmm. And there was uproar because they were putting a stop to these vouchers. And, like, they'd get, like, 70 to 80% off food and free stuff.
Wow.
Services give these coach drivers these vouchers so they bring the coach party to that services.
Got it.
There was uproar that, you know, this was being stopped. And I mentioned it on the podcast. I've never had so many messages from blokes going, what are these vouchers? Can you tell me more about these vouchers? And what does it entitle them to? They were fascinated by these vouchers.
For them, it's like being, it's a service station version of the Masonic Lodge, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do I get seconded? What's your fuck you, Rachel? Have you got a gripe you want to share with us?
Right. So it's this. It's devil's advocating or conversational gaslighting as well. So you might be talking about something like, for example, I was saying the other month, I said, I can't stand it when people say that they've read a book, but they've actually listened to the audio book.
Yeah, yeah.
It really annoys me because it's a different experience. I'm not having a go. If you want to listen rather than read, that's fine. But it's a different experience, right? And I was saying, it really annoys me. And someone went, well, what about blind people? I'm like, oh, my God, like, I'm not. Also, Braille does exist, so they can still read.
Yes.
And I was just like, just take it for what I'm saying. You know, I can't think of everything all the time.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I think you'll find, well, have you not thought that maybe you're projecting that kind of conversation? And like a few weeks ago, I was just saying, which happens in London a lot. I don't know if you've noticed this. You know, people push through the barriers on the tube now, so you beat through and people push through. And I think it happens to me a lot because I'm a small woman, right? So I think people think, oh, she's not going to say anything, which is wrong because I always do.
Yeah.
I just got to a gig and I said, oh, do you know, it really annoys me that people pushing through on the tube. Mm. And, you know, I think it happens to me a lot more because I'm small. A guy said to me, oh, I don't think that's true. Are you not just... And I'm like, oh, my God, like, it's literally just happened to me. And you're saying it hasn't.
No.
Do you know that kind of thing?
I'm trying to Ben Kenobi, like, this isn't the droid you're looking for.
I can't be bothered. But it's devil's advocating more than anything. Like, well, do you not think that that's because of...
I know exactly what you mean. So with this event coming up tonight, like, obviously, we're comedians. We criticise things. We verbalise some of the stuff that people keep down. That's our job. So... obviously, there's been a weird week for football with the top clubs wanting to get rid of FA Cup replays. Then there was a Man City player that was moaning that he'd had to play on a Wednesday and a Saturday. And he said, it's not fair. Now, first up, you say it's not fair. That is immediately going to invite a certain level of cynicism. So I just did a tweet saying, look, I'm absolutely disgusted that there are footballers being forced to play on Wednesdays and Saturdays. This is happening on UK soil, at Amnesty International UK, at UK government. And then there was a guy who tweeted me back and he was like, oh, this is a bit disappointing. First up, the only people that get to be disappointed in me are my parents and my favourite teacher, and they're all dead, right? So there's no one on earth, maybe my son now, maybe, and my wife, right? So a bit disappointed that you're advocating for men's mental health. He's had mental issues about this that he's spoken about. And I just thought, like, just because I'm doing a charity thing for blokes doesn't mean I'm not going to criticise blokes. I'm still going to be a opinionated dick. Like, that's the job description.
Yeah.
Wednesday and a Saturday. It's not fair. Well, he's saying it's not, in fairness, it's not, it's compared to the other clubs. But the problem is, right, I'd literally just done 80 minutes on stage or more. Peterborough on the Thursday, Dorset on the Friday, Southend on the Saturday. And he was like, well, it's about physical toll. What about mental toll?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Fuck you, De Silva.
Exactly. Wholeheartedly agree.
Okay, let's do a bit of politics and talk about Angela Rayner. Angela Rayner. I can't do the voice. You literally speak like that. Or has she got a specific one?
I'm not sure. Where is she from?
I think, well, she's from the Greater Manchester area.
Yeah.
I mean, so look, her accent is part of her appeal. She's the one member of the Labour front bench that seems... Labour, like old Labour, John Prescott type Labour.
I mean, it's quite refreshing to hear a regional accent.
I mean, who have they got? They've got like, yeah, they've got Keir Starmer on the front bench. Who just, I don't know what that accent is. It's from some planet of insurance salesmen. And then they've got like Yvette Cooper, another politician. I bet you any money, no one. Like the moment she stops talking, you would forget what she sounds like, right? Got Wes Streeting, whose family from the East End. He's sort of RP. So she's the colour, right, Ange? Literally, yeah. with her hair. You know, she does a lot for the Labour Party. But the Tories obviously see her as a strong figure. And they've got this, well, some people look, I mean, it was funny when they were sort of saying, you've just tried to smear a working class woman. You go, okay, like, we can't have it that if she's working class and female that we can't challenge her own behaviours.
Yes.
But what the accusation is, which the Tories and the Mail and other right-wing press have been pursuing, is quite hard to understand for a lot of people, I think.
Yes.
The idea was, because of where her homes was registered, that there was a sale of a house where she didn't pay a certain amount of capital gains tax, which may be 1,500 quid, right? Then there's this secondary issue of where she was registered to vote. And the problem is already apparent, I think, Rachel, is that as I'm explaining it, it's kind of hard to explain, or harder than it should be. But it all already feels like something the public might see as fairly small beer.
Yeah, I mean, I find it massively confusing because anything to do with houses or taxes, I've only recently got, I've got my head around income tax, sort of. And then houses are tough because I've never owned a house.
Mm-hmm.
I was brought up in a council house. I know there is the right to buy, and I would have been eligible for that at one point,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't afford to buy the council house. So I'm still confused because I doubt I will ever be a homeowner. I'm here in London paying someone else's second mortgage, which I think about every single day. And I'm just baffled. So basically she was meant to have had two houses. Is that right?
So when you sell a property, if you make a profit on it over a certain percentage, that you're liable for capital gains tax, right? So there's a threshold, right. But once you cross into it. But some of that is dependent on where. This is the problem, Rachel, right? If the public can't understand simply what it is that's alleged,
yes.
Right? If you say to me, like a Tory MP, as happened in the last week, at 3 a.m. in the morning, he was clearly being held some sort of what seemed to be, I presume, sex hostage, but there's nothing proven. That's what the public will hear. 3 a.m., sorry, in London.
It was a tethered lid. That's what
it was. he was docking with some tethered lids, lads. And so they kind of get that, you know, that he was asking for campaign funds. You go, all right, you shouldn't ask for campaign funds. And as I say, that's an ongoing investigation. But what was being alleged against that guy was clear. The problem for the Tories and the right-wing press is that even if people do understand it, they might sort of slightly go, well, we know that she was a single mum and she had this background and this might be seen along the lines of fiddling the meter. And the other problem is that it does invite comparison with some of the other stuff, right?
Yes.
So if you say, well, you've legally broken the law by not paying this, but then it reminds you of that tax avoidance is legal.
Mm.
I think even if you do understand it, I'm still not sure it works the purpose that the accusers are hoping for.
Yeah, and I do feel that everything that's happened that the Conservatives have done over the past few years, the Dominic Cummings incident, the parties during lockdowns, that kind of stuff, I'm kind of just a bit like, right, and this is what you're going to keep going at, is it? You're going to keep going and going and going at this. And I don't know, I just kind of, what I'd rather instead of this, I mean, obviously if she's done something wrong, fine, but what I'd rather is concentrating on the actual things that need sorting, the actual issues, the actual bigger picture, you know, instead of a distraction tactic. You know, look over there, don't look at this. That's what it feels like.
Well, I think both parties are engaged in this because what they don't want us to realise is the essential similarities between their approach. So sort of smearing, or for want of a better word, is a safer territory. On the negative against her, right, she said she's had this legal advice. It would be very simple to publish it, right? That's tricky. And she was quite daft once upon a time where she sort of said the moment that there were investigations against Boris, she was, oh, they're laughing at you. Do you remember she was doing that line there? They're taking it, fucking laughing at you. I always thought she was sort of like, you know, a 14-year-old girl in a playground who just wants to see a fight for her own amusement. Do you hear what they said? They're fucking laughing, man. And so she said that Boris should resign just because there was an investigation, right? Which was premature. That's not how things work. Like, it's being found guilty of things, which are reasons to resign. And so there's that she's kind of hoist by her own petard a little bit. But then the other thing is like Keir Starmer's again doing a classic fucking splinters sitting on the fence thing, where it's going, like, I completely believe Ange. Have you read her legal advice kit? I haven't had time to read it yet. Sorry, mate. Every time you stand up in the comments, you're like, when I was director of the Crown Prosecution Service, if your mate, right, if any of us knew somebody that was director of the Crown Prosecution, we'd go straight to them and go, sorry, mate, I know you're busy, but could you read this?
Yeah, well, exactly. You should be showing interest. You should be reading this. If this is one of your closest people you work with, coming up to a very important time, coming up to a general election, hopefully, because basically what it says that he's not read it, then it makes it look like she has done something wrong and he's avoiding it.
Yeah, or I don't want to go down with this ship if something has happened.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just do the right thing. Read the thing.
It's classic Starmer equivocation, because I can remember when he was like the Brexit, shadow Brexit secretary, his thing was like, you know, we will honour the Brexit vote so long as it satisfies these six criteria. And one of them was like, a unicorn needed to appear on the fifth day of Brexit and stuff. All this impossible shit that could never happen. You know, and he's done this before where he tries to tie things in semantic straitjacket because he's a lawyer. So the thing that could happen here, I wonder, is if she you know, she's said, right, if I've broken the law, I'll resign, right? Which suggests to me that she's fairly confident. But if she does have to resign, she'll definitely come back, right? She won't be out of the front bench for long. The real kind of collateral could be for Keir Starmer, because it's yet another situation, like with that, the anti-Semitic comments of his MP, where his first reaction wasn't an especially good one.
What most people think.
Okay, so in a similar way, like where the Tories have got a story and it should work well for them, i.e. Rayner, and it's not working that well. There are other areas where this is happening too, you know, like economically. Wage growth has outstripped inflation for several months now. No one feels like that, so no one cares. Inflation has gone down quicker than, but no one wants to give the government credit for that, even though a lot of people blame the government when it was going up. And then we have this stat that's come out today on Monday, which is serious violent crime is down 14% in England and Wales. And this is a legit stat. I can already see you're cautious about this. I mean, you do live in London at the moment, right?
I've been saying this, you know, I'm from Manchester. I'm from an area in North Manchester that, you know, isn't the best area. And yeah, there was a lot of crime, but I never felt scared. I lived in London for 5 years. I've noticed in 5 years, either I'm becoming more hyper aware or nervous, or things are worse. And I think people are very dissatisfied, and it's showing in people's behaviour in the street. The street that I live on, I've never seen so many open drug deals in my life, and I'm from Manchester.
Yeah.
There seems to be a general feeling of discontent.
Do you live on Albert Square, by any chance? That would explain a lot of this.
But I just feel, I don't know, I feel like there's something in the air and I can't put my finger on it. It's not just me that said this. Like, quite a few people have said this. Like, one of my friends who's lived in London all her life, who's a Londoner, she's like, I don't know, I just don't feel safe at the moment.
Are we hitting that point though where we're a bit more scared? Like, because this is the thing, this study is, and look, I don't know how it plays out in London. There are a lot of people, you know, Khan has got a lot of serious questions about his management of London. So what you're saying may be true. I think a lot of people will just not believe this wholesale around England, Wales. But it was a really in-depth study which is based on people turning up at A&E with presentation of wounds, puncture wounds. So it seems pretty legit, but people won't feel like that's the truth, right? Because one thing is, and this is one of my problems, is I follow loads of accounts that are about fighting. I just love punch-ups, you know, like classicpunchups.com, you know, like football fights. Loads of blokes do. I don't know if it's so much a thing in the female community.
No,
but
this is a man thing. I've noticed this, right? So
yeah,
my boyfriend will be sitting there with his phone and I'll just hear all this shouting. I'm like, what are you watching? He's like, oh, it's just a fight. I'm like, why are you watching this stuff? I can't watch stuff like that. I don't want to see stuff like that.
No, it's sickening.
You know, it pops up on your timeline and, well, you know, you want it there. Yeah. I hate when you're sort of flicking through and someone's retweeting, like, why is that? I don't want to see a fight, you know?
No, I suppose it's like for blokes, it's the most mortal thing that you can put at stake, is the ultimate jeopardy, you know? So, and it's that vicarious feeling of feeling alive through risk. I mean, it's not, I don't like it about myself, Rachel. I don't like it at all. But the problem is that we're up against feelings, right? So in a lot of cases, people go, well, it doesn't feel like that. And that is a process of getting older, like everything's getting worse. So you could say like, oh, this is the safest time globally to be alive. A lot of people say, well, it doesn't feel like that. And Facebook is still the biggest social media platform. It will share a lot of horrific things of a guy, you know, being done with a zombie knife, you know, in the street, like in East London and stuff. So people, we see more now, way more than we ever did. And here's the stat, right? And I think that most people might just reject this out of hand. There was a lot more serious crime 20 years ago, a lot more. We're talking much higher percentage. But I think you'd struggle to find people to agree with that because they didn't see the clips.
True. And then there's the other thing where, you know, and I do think it's now I've got a bit older and I am. When I was younger, I used to be scared. And now I just seem to be scared on a different level and I don't know what it is. But also, there is the other thing of like, I read a lot of true crime.
Yeah.
I don't listen to anything lighthearted. I think the most lighthearted thing I listen to is your podcast. You know, I only watch horror films and love reading about stalkers, you know, stuff like that.
Your favourite film is A Woman Gets Battered in an Alleyway.
Love
maybe that's
that kind of shit. Live for it. So, yeah, maybe when I am on the tube coming back late at night after a gig, I'm like, oh, God. You know, I've got my earphones in and I'm listening to bloody the latest true crime nonsense. I'm like,
Well, it just points your brain in a certain direction, doesn't it? One of the most interesting stats, and this people, the memory span politically that people have now is way lower than when I was a kid. So, you know, like with stabbings in London with teenage boys that caused deaths, this horrific thing, which sadly has been around throughout history. One of the highest ever numbers was in 2007. So people will often say, well, it's because of cuts to police, Tory government. It's because of just Boris Johnson. You know, like they'll come up with reasons. But in 2007, there was a record number at the time. That was before even the credit crunch, right? That was before austerity. That was a time of record investment in public services. So sometimes these things are untethered from the usual narrative of what we think. And if you look at, if you just go on like the BBC website and look at the stats of when there was more violent crimes, I mean, there's definitely a sense of nostalgia, like 90s nostalgia is off the chart at the moment. And I can sort of remember the 90s and like, dodgy estates near where I lived and violence. And obviously social attitudes change over time, but like homophobia, open racism, you know, like I'm just always cautious about this idea that it was better before, but it's terrible now. Because if that was true, fair enough. But why live in stress? I wonder this, is if you get a change of government, whether the perception might affect a lot of these things almost overnight.
See, that's interesting. I think that people are wanting a change. Is that why I'm feeling like, oh, things have been stagnating for so long? And it's like, oh, will that change? Will it just sort of pacify you for a little bit going, oh, is the hope that things might change?
Symbolic, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, at least there's a chance. Then there's the other thing that I think maybe I've started to be hyper aware as well, because I've got two nieces and a nephew, age ranges from like 12 to 17. And I'm now thinking about them in the wider world. And I always think, oh, God, I'd hate to be that age now. And I'm seeing them think, oh, God, I hope they're all right when they're out. And, you know, that kind of stuff. Is that another factor? But I do think people are thinking something's got to change. Something has to change. It feels like things have been terrible for so long.
My mum, I remember she just got more and more worried. And I don't know if anyone else had a mum like this, who basically, no matter what time you got up, you just had this sense when you walked in the house that your mum was still awake.
Yeah,
you could feel the vivid sort of scrutiny of her love.
Yeah, definitely.
So look, I suppose there's a sort of theme here, is that there are these things that the Tories could make stick, you know, whether it's rain or whether it's wage growth, inflation or crime coming down. But the prevailing mood is a very anti-government mood. So I don't know what needs to change, but they've got things out there which should play well. But the fact is, at the moment, they're just not. Okay, just a quick hype. So it's the last few dates of the tour this week. I am in Wellingborough on Thursday. I'm in Ilkley on Friday. I'm in Southport on Saturday. Could you cope with that, Bernardo Da Silva at Man City? Eh? Doing those sort of miles, you poor fucking millionaire footballers. And then I'm down again to Wimbledon on Sunday for the very last date of the UK tour at Wimbledon Theatre. And then after that, there's 5 dates at the Edinburgh Fringe, and that'll be it for the basic bloke. Rachel, obviously, you got your incredible podcast, All Killer, No Filler. How many years has that been going for now?
10 years. Ten years. I know. We're doing our 10-year anniversary tour at the moment.
Early adopters.
Yeah, very early.
And just describe it as sort of in a nutshell. We might discuss it more in a sec, but it's you mentioned earlier, it's like true crime, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so it's me, Kieran Pritchard-McLean, who's also a comedian. We pick a different serial killer to talk about every episode. No wonder I'm nervous when I'm out, you know.
Yeah,
we just started doing it. We research everything and we talk about it. But also, it's become popular because we just talk about our lives in between. So it's 10 years. Basically, what you've got is a catalogue of the last decade of my life, of things, you know, breakups, career stuff, you know, leaving work, starting to be a professional comedian. So it's like a soap opera. So you've got all that interspersed with murders.
Yeah, no, there's great chat at the beginning. And one thing I thought was interesting, I was listening to the most recent episode, and it gives you a coda for who you are as people, was that Kiri was saying that she had a hot tub and that people were giving her stick because of the environment. And you were like, oh, tell him to fuck off. He said, you work hard, you're allowed to have nice things. And I thought, it's really interesting, isn't it? Like people who might identify the left, but my God, do not stop us earning. So, yeah, like there is this feeling, like a prevailing feeling about comedy that it's all lefties. It's not, but like obviously it skews that way. But I've always thought that there's this further feeling is that women better be left wing or socially progressive, right? Because it's the same if like if you get a right wing female journalist, you notice the hate that goes towards these women. Like there's this woman that works at The Spectator called Kate Andrews, really sweet, nice woman who just happens to have right-wing views about healthcare and stuff like that. And like, there's a way that left-wing men go for them that's so much harder than they would go for anybody else. And I sort of think, are you saying to her, toe the line, right? Like, are women supposed to be, in inverted commas, nice?
I think there is that, you know. I think women in comedy in particular are under pressure to be some sort of activist as well.
Yes.
You know, why can't you just be funny? You know, and also I hate that kind of vibe of telling people what to do. You know, I don't agree with it. Like, you should be recycling. You should be doing this. How about just tell us a few jokes, you know? If you want to tell me that, tell me it in a funny way, you know, or just don't tell me at all, because I don't understand why. And it's like when people ask me, here's a great example. I mean, I did a joke on, I think it was Comedy Central Live. And basically the joke was, I was talking about how shit trains are in the UK. Mm. And I was saying, like, there are people that have arrived here from war-torn environments that have crossed the channel on a dangerous, perilous journey, and they're wondering why that was cheaper, easier, and more relaxing than getting from Nottingham to Birmingham on a Tuesday afternoon. Right, that was the bit. I got contacted by, I think it was Channel 4 making a documentary. Oh, would Rachel like to come on and talk about what it's like being an immigrant in the UK? I was like, what are you asking an immigrant? Ask the person living that experience. Why are you asking me? I make jokes about air fryers, and it's like, have you just seen that one clip and you think that I could add anything to a conversation about that, because I can't. There's this thing of, like, I think people as well are very keen to decide what your views are.
Yes.
So because my stand-up is to the point, I can't be dealing with any sort of fluff and, you know, oh, let's do this and, oh, I do so much for charity, and I can't be asked for that kind of stuff.
What do you mean the message?
Yeah.
What are you using your platform for,
yeah,
Rachel?
Yeah, not interested. What I'm using the platform for is to do jokes, because that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So because I don't do that, you sort of will get asked certain questions like, what do you think about this? And I'm like, I'm not getting involved in anything. Like, you don't need to know. It doesn't matter what I think. And I think when you are quite forthright as a woman, you know, I'm a very liberal person. I'm a lot more sort of, hey, you know, free and easy than people. I'd say bordering on hippie sometimes.
Right.
But because of how I talk and how the working classes are perceived now, I think people think that I'm right-wing in some way, and I'm certainly not.
But what you've probably got is that, like, aspirational working class thing, which I think, you know, that thing about you work hard, you can have nice things.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a luxury belief if you've come from money. You know, like, when you're sort of working class, you sort of got to get on, and you've got to hustle, and you've got to do a lot of things which would be not like kind of like Thatcherite, but like certainly independent, self-motivated, crack on, you know.
Yeah.
So it's strange the way that those two kind of like personalities can straddle one another. And I think that there are differences in comedy. Like, obviously there's a running joke about the amount of blokes who've got podcasts and chat bollocks and like the sound of their own voice. But like, what struck me about like listening to yours with Kiri was, like, as you say, the intro bit of it, a lot of it's two funny women talking bollocks, you know, and being very funny in doing it. It just doesn't feel like there's as much of that. Because it was just refreshing to hear it from, you know, slightly different angles. But is that what you're saying? Is like that women just get more stick and they're more averse to putting stuff out there?
Yeah, I think so. Every time I put a clip out, I'm like, oh, God, here we go. And I absolutely dread it. I am frightened of something going further than it should. You know, like, I sort of, you know, I don't put the right hashtags on it because I find hashtags a bit embarrassing. Anyway, there's nothing worse than hashtag funny. That's embarrassing, isn't
it? Yeah, or 10 hashtags and, like, relationship goals. You're like, what?
Yeah, hashtag funny, hashtag comedy. Oh, makes me a little.
And I mean, I'm taking the piss, but I do it. Yeah, I mean, like, the clips game. Yeah, like, it's interesting you're saying, so that, like, with stuff going viral, there's an inherent concern or fear with that happening.
Yeah, and of course, everybody, it doesn't matter if you're a bloke or a woman, for some reason, stand-up really rubs people up the wrong way.
Yeah.
Out of any sort of performance, there's something about stand-up that really pisses some people off, isn't there?
Mm.
Very attention-seeking, it has to be. But it's just when you see, like, every time anything goes out and, you know, people say, don't look at the comments, it's like, well, that's very easy to say, isn't it? But there'll be comments that range from what you're wearing to what you sound like to what you look like to and very rarely anything about what you're saying. You know, I'd one like, why is she dressed like a prostitute? I mean, what year is it, please? Sex worker.
I love the fact you don't take the issue with the comment on how you're dressed. Like, just let's get the right words, please. Yeah.
But, and it's like, well, I'm wearing what I want. You know, it's just so stupid. And And it does get you down. But and as far as, you know, political affiliations, you know, I voted Labour ever since I could vote. And I'm from a family that are, you know, always been Labour voters and stuff like that. And I find it quite annoying when people make assumptions about what I think because I'm quite forthright and I have a regional accent.
See, it's funny that, isn't it? The way that the political thing changed with 2019 and Red Wall is like, once upon a time, people would have nailed on, presumed that you were Labour. Now you're saying that people think you might be a little bit like looking at a bit of Katie Hopkins content on the DL.
It's quite upsetting, I find, that people make assumptions about your background or what you think based on how you sound. It's just, it's mad. And it's the people that make those assumptions. It's usually the middle class sort of, you know, oh, hey, we're just trying to put the world right. You know, it's always those people that make those assumptions about people like me. Because they've never met people like me. That's why.
Yeah, they've got to put you in a strict hole that they don't sort of fully understand. If it's any consolation, I've noticed on Instagram, a lot more women like fat shaming me or like my image and stuff like that. Twitter, the arseholes are almost all blokes, right? But Instagram, I've just noticed this rise of like trolly sort of content from women.
Really? And
there was one clip that I did, which I was sort of saying that like if my wife basically wanted to placate me in an argument, she could press her breasts into my face and it would work, right? I was saying the other way round, it wouldn't work if I was just waving my dick in, you know, or words that effect. And there's like this woman's like kind of going, have you ever thought it's because like you're older and you're not that hot anymore? And like,
oh my
you know,
God.
Young men. So just know, sister, that, you know, a bit of comradeship in the trenches that is starting to come back the other way. Instead of getting it rid of it, let's just be honest that we could all just have the equality of misery, you know, misery equality. Just one quick thing I want to talk to you about, and this, I'm sorry, this is a cliche thing to ask a female comic, but there is a question here, right? So we've had high profile creeps in the comedy industry, and I won't ask you to comment on that, but you would have had experience with promoters, other comics and all that sort of stuff. One thing I was just wondering, right, is that obviously I know that it goes on and it is horrific and stuff. Do you think it's any worse than any other job? That was the question I was asking myself, because I was sort of thinking about office places, sexually immature men that can't cope with certain things. Or is it that comedy and power imbalances do make it a different environment?
To be honest, it sounded like you were going to say, I was just wondering, has anyone ever mentioned me?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we all know that there's the WhatsApp group.
Hey, I'm not in that group.
Really?
I think it's an urban myth now.
Well, so this is the myth of an all-female WhatsApp group that discusses
all
these.
Yeah, there used to be one, but people started leaving it. You don't like any WhatsApp group. It starts to become a bit annoying, doesn't it?
One or two personalities tend to dominate.
Yeah, so just, you know, I like to just do things myself. Anyway, so is it any different? And I say I've been in the world of work since I was 16. Do you know what it is? I think with comedy, it's a little bit more noticeable, but it's always, for me, it was at a lower level. So when I started out, and bear in mind, when you're in the world of work, you're in, you know, usually in an office or a shop or whatever with other people, you know.
Yeah.
I think in comedy, particularly when I started out, it attracts a bunch of weird characters, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be people on the lower levels that say they're a promoter, either a new comedian or they'll help you out, you know, that kind of thing. And because you're new to it and you're a woman, you start to do that thing where you go, getting a bad vibe from him. Oh, maybe I shouldn't be like that. Is it me? You know, you think that. Mm. And then as soon as you start to progress a bit more, you're like, oh, no, that guy is a weirdo. I just think there's something about comedy at the amateur levels that will attract people like that. Maybe the same as anything at an amateur level, I don't know. And because it's unregulated and you can just turn up at a comedy club and, you know, if you do...
And it's a passion, isn't it? People want to follow their dreams. So if the gatekeeper has the power, you've sort of got to play ball. I mean, like, obviously, I've never had the sexual dimension come into it, but humouring promoters... I mean, I remember this one promoter, right? I won't name names, but I basically was his counsellor. I used to do 45 minutes of counselling for him and then he'd give me a gig for 150 quid cash. I remember once he was saying to me, like, he was talking about how he couldn't sleep for ages. It was always about how he couldn't sleep. And then he just casually threw in, like, basically that he had two families and neither of them knew about each other. So he had a miss.
Oh, my God.
He had misses and kids in different parts of the country, right? I said, do you think it's that? You know, insert name. Let's call him Derek. I said, do you think it's that, Derek? And he was like, Yeah, I'll get you. I suppose, yeah, that is on my mind. I'm like, mate, you're a fucking psychopath. So, I mean, maybe it's not that the workplace isn't better. It's just that, I guess it may go with the territory a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, I've worked in different environments and there's always something. But, you know, luckily, I've always worked with people that I felt comfortable about raising issues with, like, This has happened. This is a bit weird. And it was usually never people I worked with. It used to be customers that would come in.
What, the library?
Oh, look, there were so many weirdos that came in at the library. That, like, I'm talking...
Library nonces.
Library nonces. Just weird guys, you know. And because it was an old building, it was open to the public. Yeah. It'd be like clockwork, you know, be like, oh, God, here he is, you know, this one's in today or whatever. Yeah. But again, that's probably a wider conversation about mental health and care in the community, isn't it?
And just men generally. I mean, I do think that there is this problem whereby comedy, like being able to make people laugh, for a lot of women, in the tick list of things they find attractive, is pretty high.
Yes.
So therefore, if you can do it well or you're in that game, it's like a fucking superpower. Whereas whenever you look at a bloke's list of women, it's like, even though men tend to like funny women, they don't sort of say, oh, yeah, she's got to have a great body, she's got to have a career, and she must be able to nail an anecdote.
Yeah. See, this is it. I was actually saying to my boyfriend, because it's so weird comedy. You know, men become more attractive as a comedian and women become less attractive. Women, as soon as they become successful at comedy, men are quite turned off by it.
You know, just one last point, though. The great thing for you girls is that the Gen Z lads coming through, they want strong female role models. You're going to have these hot young lads just lusting after you in your dotage. It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah, and then I've got to do everything for them and look after them. And, yeah, no thanks. I didn't want kids.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to be sex followed by making him a packed lunch, is it? Rachel, thanks so much for coming on What Most People Think. Love to have you back soon to chat about things. It was real. I mean, like in the Patreon-only section, like a bit of male-female perspective. It makes all the difference, you know? It's a cultural exchange. Obviously, people, I recommend the podcast All Killer, No Filler. Whether you're into serial killers or, I mean, that's probably not the right way of putting it, or not, there's just two very funny comics as well talking about stuff. Is there tickets for anything you've got at the moment?
We are doing our 10th anniversary tour. That's on at the moment. Tomorrow, then, if you're listening to this on, where's it? Thursday, 25th, we're at Hackney Empire. There's about 15 tickets left for that.
Hackney Empire? Look at that, man. Podcasting is incredible.
We do Manchester. Have a look at allkillernofiller.com. There's tickets there. And then that's it, really. I'll be at the Edinburgh Fringe in August for the entire month.
Yeah.
Doing two shows. I'm doing my stand-up show that I toured, and I'm doing a brand new character show, which I've really been enjoying working on. That's it, really. But, you know, you can find me on the social media if you're bothered. If you're not, don't.
Yeah, no, go and check it out. And Rachel Fairbairn, thanks so much for being on What Most People Think.
Thank you.
And listen, I am off to do the charity event. And in advance, if you came to it, thank you so much. You can still donate to the crowdfunder for the video of the night. And I will see you next week. The tour will be finished. Basic Bloke will be buried with his Fred Perry t-shirt. And who knows, I might emerge wearing some chiffon. I'll see you next week.